From the KTOO Newsroom here in Juneau, I'm Jennifer Pemberton. A church recently finished its first year as Juneau's cold weather emergency shelter, and last week the Resurrection Lutheran Church's permit to house the shelter was renewed for another 2 years. KTOO's Lindsay Brolaney talked with a pastor at the church about how things went at the shelter and what lessons they learned.
The shelter is open from November 15th through April 15th on nights it's expected to be below freezing. Pastor Karen Perkins says the cold weather shelter was busy. The shelter was open almost every night, and most nights were close to capacity.
We were scrambling to find we weren't going to put somebody out on the street to freeze to death, so the staff had to get creative about some safe places to put people.
The shelter was started by the City and Borough of Juneau in 2017, and in recent years, the city has contracted with organizations in town to run it. The shelter's start last fall was very last minute, after the nonprofit St. Vincent de Paul pulled out of its contract with the city to provide the shelter. The Resurrection Lutheran Church offered to take the contract over, but it needed to get a permit first. The church got the permit, but only a week before the shelter had to be up and running. And the church pulled it off. Within a week, they found all the staff they needed. Most of the staff stayed the entire season. The capacity of the shelter was 28 because of COVID, and sometimes staff had to figure out where to put people when it was past capacity.
At one point, we had to make space for cots in what was functionally a storage room.
The actual church building also went through some strain while housing the shelter, and it was hard on the building's plumbing. And there were some nights where it was noisy. Before the shelter opened, businesses and residents in the area had concerns about the shelter's impact on the neighborhood. Perkins doesn't think it was a strain on the neighborhood and says they were able to handle any issues that came up quickly.
So a lot of people who said they had anxiety have since either changed their mind or said, okay, went well this year.
Some of the people who used the shelter this year have never stayed in a shelter before. Perkins says this is partly because of Juneau's housing crisis. People with housing vouchers can't get housing. People call within an hour and a place is already taken. Or people have to move because their landlord is selling. Perkins says it's heartbreaking to see.
It's hard to face somebody and say, I know that there's no place to live. And the amount of courage that it takes for somebody to walk the first time into a shelter or the first time into a food pantry or whatever is extraordinary. It's really, really tough.
Over 250 people used the shelter this year. Perkins says most of them were there for less than 20 days. Now that the church's permit is renewed, the church is allowed to house the shelter for another 2 winters. But that doesn't mean the church will. It will still need to extend the contract with the city first. Perkins says they renewed the permit to be prepared in case the church needs to house the shelter again, so they aren't scrambling at the last minute like last year. She says there's a few things they would change based on the lessons they learned this past winter, like training staff more and making sure people who use the shelter regularly don't store their things around the church. She wants to ask the people who use the shelter what their recommendations are, and to share their stories on the church's Facebook.
The more the community learns about people's lives and how it is to not have your own spot, it'll be helpful for everybody.
Perkins says the church doesn't want to become a shelter forever. It's hard work to run, but there aren't better options right now, and the shelter is needed in the community.
We don't want people out there on the streets just because we don't have a better plan.
Perkins says people want to find a long-term solution to the cold weather shelter, but that solution isn't here yet. So the church is doing what it can by providing an option if it's needed. In Juneau, I'm Lindsay Brolaney.
Of all the cases of paralytic shellfish poisoning in the state in recent decades, a quarter of them have been from Kodiak Island. That's according to a recent report by state health authorities. The state's latest data dump provides a wide-ranging look at paralytic shellfish poisoning in Alaska over the last 30 years. KMXT's Kirsten Dobreth reports.
Paralytic shellfish poisoning is an illness caused by a marine toxin that's spread by harmful algal blooms. It's serious, sometimes fatal, and most commonly found in butter clams and blue mussels. And according to the latest data from the State Department of Health and Social Services, it started to become more common year-round and not just in warmer months. Andy Wall is the environmental coordinator at the Kodiak Area Native Association, a tribal health nonprofit. She says commercially harvested shellfish has to be tested for PSP toxins before it can be sold to customers.
But there's no state testing program for subsistence harvest.
Subsistence being the more casual and traditional gathering by Alaskans in coastal communities. Statewide, more than half of PSP cases were among Alaska Natives. Wall says the gap in subsistence testing is a big deal in coastal communities across the state, including Kodiak, where digging clams is a popular sunny day pastime and an important food source.
Shellfish are an important subsistence resource to a lot of people around the state. And to just say don't collect shellfish, don't harvest shellfish, it's not feasible.
Canna was awarded a federal grant back in 2018 to monitor beaches on Kodiak Island for high levels of toxins. And the public could send in locally harvested clams and mussels to the organization as part of the program. Canna would ship the samples to the Southeast Alaska Tribal Ocean Research, known as CTOR in Sitka, for testing free of charge. And they let people know if their shellfish was safe to eat based on the levels of toxins detected. But the program's funding ran out at the end of last year, and Canna hasn't been able to restart testing since then. Senator Lisa Murkowski's office announced in March that federal stopgap funds were included in the omnibus spending package to jumpstart the program. Canna won't receive the funds and be able to start testing again until September. Meanwhile, the latest state data also showed a decline in reported cases of PSP across Alaska over the last 4 years. Wall says that might not paint a full picture of what's going on.
The question there is that from people not eating it? Is that from people losing this important resource, or is that from increased testing? I don't know the answer to that. I hope one day it'll be eventually the increased testing.
Subsistence harvesters on Kodiak Island can still send their local shellfish to CTOR for $75. Alaska's Department of Environmental Conservation also provides testing for a fee. In Kodiak, I'm Kirsten Dobrath.
Signs are pointing to Santa Claus being a possible frontrunner in the special U.S. House race. The North Pole city councilman has obvious name recognition, and now he's the target of an attack ad by another of the 48 candidates in the primary. Alaska Public Media's Liz Ruskin reports.
In a crowded contest, one way to stand out is to take on Santa Claus.
My name is Josh Rivak, and I'm waging a war on Santa.
A 30-second video produced by the Rivak campaign shows a photo of Claus holding a Medicare for All sign.
This Bernie bro legally changed his name to Santa, and he wants Alaskans to accept his North Pole Marxist fantasies.
The video has some ho-ho-hos and references to the naughty list. Rivak, a Republican state senator from Anchorage, admits he's having some fun with it. But he also wants Alaskans to know that he thinks voting for Claus is no joke.
I think what's important for people to understand is that this guy's a really, really strong socialist.
The 74-year-old Santa Claus says he doesn't mind people poking fun at his name, but he rejects the labels of Marxist and socialist.
No, in fact, I'm an independent, progressive, democratic socialist. Four words, nothing too terrifying about that.
Claus has decided he's only running to fill the remainder of the late Congressman Don Young's term. He's running a campaign on $400 of his own money. Rivak has campaign professionals on his team. Like many of the other candidates in the special election, he is also running for the full 2-year term that begins in January. Reporting from Washington, I'm Liz Ruskin.
Public comment ends today for a U.S. Navy proposal to more than quadruple the area its ships are allowed to maneuver for a war game exercise next summer in the Gulf of Alaska. Northern Edge is a biennial large-scale training exercise that involves the Air Force, Army, and Marine Corps, as well as the Navy, which says it needs more room. In the past, the Navy has worked within a 55,000-square-mile zone east of Kodiak and south of Prince William Sound, but for 2023, it wants to add almost 250,000 square miles, stretching west to a point south of Dutch Harbor. Critics of Northern Edge include coastal Alaska city councils, commercial fishers, and environmental and Alaska Native groups. They say such a massive exercise, often conducted in May with live munitions and active sonar, disrupts fish and marine mammals during a critical time as they're migrating and breeding in the Gulf of Alaska. The Navy disputes its activities harm fish and marine mammals, saying it takes steps to mitigate negative impacts. And unlike its existing zone, the Navy would not conduct live fire training or use active sonar in the expanded area. A supplemental draft environmental impact statement is available for review and public comment at goaeis.com. That's goaeis.com. EIS.com. The comment period is open until 11:59 tonight. We seem to be in a break between rain events this afternoon, but more rain is expected tonight and tomorrow. This is KTOO News.